Air.com.
It's nearly 12 o'clock and time for the KMXT Midday Report. Thank you for listening to KMXT on 100.1 FM. It's your public radio station, broadcasting from Signal Hill here in Kodiak, Alaska, where it is 46 degrees, partly cloudy, calm winds now. It was blustery earlier today. We're looking for scattered showers today. For the next hour or so, turning to rain. High near 48 today, west wind 15, turning to the south this afternoon. Rain is likely tonight too, mainly before 10 p.m., mostly cloudy skies overnight with a low of 38, west wind to 10 to 15 miles per hour. And scattered showers tomorrow too, mainly before 1 p.m., mostly cloudy skies tomorrow with a high near 46, west wind just 10 miles per hour. Coming up on the Midday Report, James Turner is ready to return to the Kodiak Island Borough Assembly. He tells us more. A representative from one of the Department of Defense's regional centers will be addressing the Kodiak City Council tonight. And a report on that big earthquake out of Chignik.
Live from NPR News, I'm Lakshmi Singh. House Speaker Nancy Pelosi says in order to pass both major infrastructure bills, Democrats will need to dramatically scale down the price tag of the $3.5 trillion social spending bill. NPR's Claudia Grisales reports Pelosi suggests her caucus can do that by shortening the shelf life of the plan's major provisions.
Speaker Pelosi says Democrats are negotiating a spending package closer to $2 trillion by offering the same aid but for fewer years than originally planned.
I'm very disappointed that we're not going with the original $3.5 trillion, which was very transformative. But in the whatever we do, we'll make decisions that will continue to be transformative.
Pelosi argues Democrats can still put a lot into three major buckets in their bill: climate change, child care, and support for working individuals and families, such as paid medical leave. She says that could also still include aid for universal pre-K, child tax credits, and a Medicare expansion. Claudia Grisales, NPR News, Washington.
More details emerging in the high-profile death of Gabby Petito. The Teton County coroner, Dr. Brent Blue, has just revealed the exact cause of death of the young woman who went missing during a cross-country road trip and later turned up dead.
The Teton County coroner's office is following the following verdict. In the manner of death of Gabrielle Lenora Petito, we find the cause and manner to be cause death by strangulation and manner is homicide.
Blue says Petito was killed 3 to 4 weeks before her body was found on September 19th. The Teton County Coroner's Office had previously ruled Petito's death a homicide, but did not say how she died, pending further autopsy results. Authorities are still searching for her boyfriend, Brian Laundrie. He's considered a person of interest. The Brooklyn Nets say seven-time NBA All-Star guard Kyrie Irving will not be allowed to play or practice with the team until he complies with a New York City vaccine mandate. The ordinance requires people to be at least partially vaccinated against COVID-19 before entering indoor sports arenas. Here's NPR's Tom Goldman.
The NBA Players Union says nearly 96% of the league's players are vaccinated, but it's the few who aren't, principally Kyrie Irving, who've attracted attention in the run-up to next week's start to the regular season. Under the city's mandate, Irving faced the prospect of not playing in home games. Brooklyn general manager Sean Marks says the team made its decision because it didn't want a part-time player.
They're never easy decisions, but at the end of the day, I think we're looking at putting a group of people out there that are going to be able to participate fully.
Mark says losing a player the caliber of Irving hurts. Irving won't be paid for missing home games, reportedly about $380,000 a game. Tom Goldman, NPR News.
It's NPR.
NPR News is brought to you in part by Providence Kodiak Island Counseling Center. For an appointment or more information, 481-2400.
Final results for Kodiak's local election aren't expected before Wednesday. That's when the city and borough canvassing processes are set to begin, with results expected in the evening. The city and borough canvassing boards go over absentee ballots and question ballots and review and add them to the final count. Absentee by mail ballots are still arriving throughout today and will be added to the final tally. According to the City of Kodiak Clerk's office, they are expecting between 20 and 30 more votes, barely enough to challenge incumbent City Council member Terry Haynes' 14-vote lead over Tracy Craig. Haynes is also a host on KMXT. The Borough Clerk's office has not released a figure for uncounted ballots. Once the tally is complete on Wednesday, they will be sent and finalized before the City Council on Thursday, and elected officials will be sworn in. Borough results are ratified October 21st, and the oath of office for the elected Borough Assembly members will be on October 25th. James Turner's tenure on the Kodiak Island Borough Assembly began in 2018, and it seems that it will continue into the next 3 years following this recent re-election. Turner spoke about his priorities coming into a second term. He said that for him, tackling the borough budget is the foremost issue.
Fixing some of the budget issues that we have, trying to figure out some better ways to fill the gaps in personnel.
Turner will be returning to a substantially different borough assembly. Joseph Delgado and Jared Griffin will be filling vacant seats, and Scott Smiley is set to return in the wake of the recent election. According to Turner, he looks forward to this roster.
Well, I worked with Scott when I first got on the assembly, and I liked working with Scott, and that was a good fit. He and I got along on a lot of items, and some items we didn't necessarily agree on. So I've worked with Scott in the past, so that should be similar to what we had in the past. Jared and I and Joseph have worked on the consolidation committee together, and I appreciate both their efforts in that, and I think that they both have a great work ethic when it comes to things like that, and I can't wait to see what they have to show us.
With Delgado and Griffin having been recently sworn in, and Turner and Smiley to swear on October 25th, 4 of 7 serving Borough Assembly members will have joined the body within the past 2 months. And for full disclosure, Kodiak Assembly member Jared Griffin is also employed by KMXT.
The Kodiak City Council will be hearing from the Department of Defense tonight during their regular work session. Retired Air Force Major General Randy Church Key will be giving a presentation on the future of Arctic security and how Kodiak will fit into that future. Key is a senior advisor for the Ted Stevens Center for Arctic Security Studies. He was announced as a senior advisor for the center in late September. It is the newest of the regional centers for the Department of Defense. The DOD regional centers are academic forums that foster strong international networks of security leaders. The Kodiak Emergency Operations Center gave us a new update today on new cases of COVID-19. 19 new cases have been reported for the Kodiak Island Borough today. As of today, 123 cases are currently classified as active locally. There are 2 active cases currently hospitalized in Kodiak. A 6.9 magnitude earthquake struck about 70 miles east of Chignik Bay shortly after midnight Monday morning, according to the U.S. Geological Survey. Jenny Grunert lives in the neighboring village of Chignik Lagoon with her husband and 2 children.
We woke up to hearing the rattling of everything in the house, and then we got up, we ran to the kids' room to make sure they were okay, and then we got our earthquake bucket that we have ready, as well as our survival kit, and just waited for the tsunami warning, which never happened.
The Alaska Earthquake Center says the quake was actually an aftershock of the magnitude 8.2 earthquake that reverberated in communities along the Alaska Peninsula in July, the country's largest in a half a century.
That one was really big, and that one lasted a really long time. This one was actually a really short earthquake, so it didn't last very long.
Because there was no tsunami warning, Grunert and other residents didn't have to evacuate their homes. Still, Grunert says they were ready to head to higher ground. She and her husband came up with the idea for an earthquake bucket after the 7.0 earthquake that hit Anchorage in 2018. They lived in Anchorage at the time, and 2 friends from out of town were watching their dog.
they were not prepared for an earthquake whatsoever, because when you usually go into Anchorage, you're not ready for something like that. So we came up with the idea of putting a bucket together.
The bucket contains basics like an emergency radio and flashlight. Since they have little kids, Grunert says they also have snacks, extra clothes, and games.
And then also ways to communicate, cell phone chargers, things like that. So when we have to go, we can just grab our 5-gallon bucket and pretty much head out the door, take some water, and then we are set for at least 24 hours.
The Associated Press says this is one of the largest aftershocks since the 8.2 magnitude quake struck the region in July. It says that so far, the state's Emergency Management Center has reported no damage. Anchorage marked Indigenous Peoples Day on Monday by opening a newly renovated park downtown featuring Dena'ina Athabascan design elements. As Alaska Public Media's Kavitha George reports, the park, known as Frontierland Park, will also be getting a new name.
Several dozen people gathered at a small park in South Addition across from the downtown park strip on Monday morning to celebrate the revamped community space and the greater visibility of Native culture in Anchorage.
Happy Indigenous People Day!
Woo! The park includes whimsical design features that were inspired by Dena'ina Athabascan culture, including beluga whale sculptures for children to play on and porcupine quill patterns on the playground surfaces. Several politicians were present at the opening, including members of the Anchorage Assembly, state legislature, and former Governor Bill Walker, who signed Indigenous Peoples Day into law in 2017. Aaron Leggett, president of the Native Village of Aklutna, thanked the community for committing to recognizing Anchorage's first people.
It takes support like you guys coming out and voting for bonds and all those wonderful things to make it happen so that Anchorage can truly honor and celebrate its rich history that includes the Indigenous people.
Funding for the renovations came from several grants and a 2017 voter-approved bond. Michael Fredericks, president of interior design firm SALT, was involved in the Indigenous Design Committee that worked with Parks and Recreation to shape the renovations. Fredericks is Alaska Native of Yupik descent. She's proposing naming the space Conchi Park, taken from the Dena'ina word for porcupine, instead of the current name Frontierland, which she says feels outdated.
And really to tear that away and say, this is it. We're in a new day, you know, that all of our history is important. Not only that, you know, we were colonized and all these things happened, but also 10,000 years ago, people were here doing amazing things and got us here today.
Fredericks hopes that involving an Indigenous advisory committee could serve as a model across the city for integrating Native cultural elements into parks and other public spaces. She says Native culture wasn't made visible when she was growing up in Anchorage, and she's excited that's changing.
We just didn't celebrate it. We celebrated as a family, but it wasn't like something that was celebrated by people of other cultures outwardly, not like this at all. So, you know, I'm only 44, so that's not that long ago that I was 10 years old, and to have such a change in 35 years is pretty incredible. You know, like, my kid won't ever know shame or need to act like anything. You know, that's a big deal.
Reporting in Anchorage, I'm Kavitha George.
Lieutenant Governor Kevin Meyer has certified an initiative that would require the state of Alaska to officially recognize all of Alaska's federally recognized tribes. The action means a group called Alaskans for Better Government can start collecting signatures to put the measure before voters next year. Tlingit and Haida President Richard Chaya'ish Peterson chairs the group.
As we try to build communities, build a better Alaska, it's about relationships. And so the fact that the state of Alaska doesn't recognize us currently is kind of a barrier in the building blocks, right? So that's what it really comes down to.
The federal government recognizes 229 Alaska tribes. That recognition means the tribes are sovereign and have a government-to-government relationship with the feds. In a legal opinion on the initiative, an Alaska Assistant Attorney General says it's not clear that recognition would have any legal effect on the relationship between the state and the tribes. But he says there's nothing unconstitutional about the proposal. Organizers of the initiative say state recognition is hugely symbolic, but would have practical impact too. Barbara Walthall G-Rock Blake points out that a lot of tribes are in places with no other form of local government.
And when trying to do business with our communities, when there's a lack of municipal governments, a lot of state departments will choose to just ignore having conversations with the local people when coming in to do any kind of work in our communities. And so it does create somewhat of a barrier.
A bill to require state recognition passed the state house this spring, but wasn't brought up in the Senate. To get on the ballot, initiative organizers would have to collect more than 36,000 signatures. Two men were rescued Saturday night near Tuntutuliak after their boat overturned in a storm. KYUK's Greg Kim has this story of the search and rescue operation that brought the two men home to safety.
Two men from Kongeganak began a trip up the Kuskokwim River by boat to Bethel on Wednesday, October 6th. They didn't get far before they found themselves in rough waters. The men had told people about their travel plans. When they still hadn't arrived by Saturday, a search team started looking for them by plane. Bethel Search and Rescue and Alaska State Troopers were part of the aerial search team. At around 5 o'clock on Saturday, the plane sighted the two men near a location known to boaters as West Point. It's located several miles south of Tuntutuliak. Bethel Search and Rescue member Fritz Charles was on the plane. He said he saw two men huddled in the grass near an overturned boat waving at the plane. However, Charles said the plane could not land there and a rescue team could not immediately travel to the men by boat due to high winds. Over the past few days, wind speeds in the region have often been above 20 miles per hour. But there was a brief lull in the storm late at night. Around midnight on Sunday, Kongeganak search and rescue member Roderick Phillip noticed the weather calming down. And according to the forecast, high winds would pick back up in the morning.
Had to make a quick decision to go get them before the storm hits. I don't know if they would have survived through the second storm.
Roderick and his son, Jonathan Phillip, left Kongeganak in the dark, navigating with their boat's spotlight and a GPS. They received the coordinates of the missing boaters from the Alaska Air National Guard. The National Guard had deployed an HC-130 search and rescue plane to fly above the missing men. It was a little before 2 in the morning on Sunday when Roderick and his son found the two men. He said it was easy to spot them. They had set up a fire, and the Alaska Air National Guard's plane was shining red and green lights on the men.
It looked like a spaceship that was going over us.
He said the men were huddled around the fire with a tarp. They were both wet from the waist down.
I told them, hey, I'm glad you guys are alive and well. Told them that we have to get them back to Kongeganak before the storm hits again.
Roderick said the men changed into dry clothes that their family in Kongeganak had provided. The men decided to leave behind their overturned boat. They explained to Roderick what had happened.
The engine quit and it was a storm. And not about a minute after the engine quit, their boat got swamped and flipped over.
When Roderick heard that, he thought of his late grandfather, who had given him advice for that exact situation.
He always brought up that if my engine fails in rough seas, first thing I should do is throw my anchor out of the boat. So my boat will always be facing the wind and waves.
Roderick added that you should always check the forecast before you make travel plans. The Coast Guard recommended in a press release it put out about the rescue that people carry satellite phones when they're traveling out of cell service. Roderick said the two men who were missing are back in Kongeganak and in good condition. Thanks to search and rescue teams from two communities, Alaska State Troopers and the Alaska Air National Guard. In Bethel, I'm Greg Kim.
Alaska State Troopers SWAT teams fatally shot a man Friday morning while trying to serve warrants at a home in Salcha, about 40 miles south of Fairbanks.
Approximately 7 a.m., the Alaska State Troopers Northern Special Emergency Reaction Team and South Central Special Emergency Reaction Team deployed with a search warrant to a residence in Salcha to locate and serve multiple arrest warrants on 35-year-old Salcha resident Scott Hottinger.
Troopers spokesperson Austin McDaniel says Hottinger was wanted on a no-bail felony probation violation arrest warrant for kidnapping and separate warrants for felony domestic violence assault and misdemeanor assault. McDaniel says Hottinger stepped out of the house soon after the special emergency reaction teams arrived. He was carrying a gun and began shouting as he approached them.
CERT members announced themselves as state troopers. Hottinger fired a gun, and CERT members returned fire, fatally wounding him.
McDaniel says no troopers were injured. He declined to say how many officers fired their weapon while an investigation into the shooting is underway. But he says the officer or officers will be identified after they've been on administrative leave for 3 days, as required by the State Department of Public Safety policy. The shooting occurred at a residence at mile 322 on the Richardson Highway, about 3 miles from the Salcha School. The school did not go into lockdown, according to a Fairbanks North Star Borough School District spokesperson. McDaniels could not say if Hottinger lived at the residence where the shooting occurred. A news release issued by the troopers says the Alaska Bureau of Investigation will look into the incident. Once that investigation is completed, it'll be reviewed by the Alaska Office of Special Prosecutions. Both are routine actions that are conducted after shootings involving law enforcement officers.
This is Alaska Fish Radio. I'm Lainey Welch. More big cutbacks for crab in the Bering Sea. More after this.
Fish Radio is brought to you by Alaska Boats and Permits in Homer, marine broker for vessels, permits, and IFQs, online at alaskaboat.com.
The catch for snow crab, Alaska's largest Bering Sea crab fishery, has been slashed to just 5.6 million pounds for the upcoming season, down 88% from the previous harvest of 45 million pounds. Just 3 years ago, managers were touting a huge snow crab cohort poised to enter the fishery, but this summer survey showed the crabs had practically disappeared. Scientists blame predation by cod, disease, and a warming sea bottom that's pushed the snow crab to deeper waters further west. They say evidence points to a downturn in population and not just a migration out of the survey zone. The Red King crab fishery at Bristol Bay is canceled for the first time in 25 years. The closures and cutbacks will be a big financial hit to crabbers, mostly non-Alaskans, who in recent years have grossed over $200 million from those two fisheries. Most recent federal data show that for Red King crab, 72% of landed revenues and 64% for snow crab go to people who live out of Alaska. A small Bering Sea tanner crab fishery of 1.1 million pounds was okayed in the Western District, down 1 million from last season. The Bering Sea fisheries open on October 15. Alaska's crab shortfall will be made up by imports from Russia. So far this year, the U.S. has purchased over 14 million pounds of Red King crab, valued at nearly $282 million, and 26 million pounds of snow crab at a cost of more than $294 million. The U.S. also, so far this year, has paid over $1 billion to purchase more than 83.5 million pounds of snow crab from eastern Canada. Find out more at Pacific Marine Expo, November 18th through 20th in Seattle, and find links at alaskafishradio.com. Fish Radio is also brought to you by OBI Seafoods. In Kodiak, I'm Lainey Welch.
This is the Island Messenger, a look at personal messages, the weather, and community announcements.
Good afternoon and welcome to your Island Messenger for Tuesday. It is the 12th day of October, the year 2021. The sun rose today at 8:38. It will set again at 7:11. That will give us 10 hours and 33 minutes of daylight, a loss of 4 minutes and 54 seconds. Our record high for this date was 58 degrees. That was set in 1983 and 86. And our record low for this date was 12 degrees, set in 1924. Ooh. Currently 46 degrees under mostly cloudy skies. And they have southeast winds at 6 miles per hour at the airport right now. We're looking for scattered showers before 2 p.m., then plain old rain, mainly after 2 p.m. High near 48 today. West wind to 15 knots, becoming south. Chance of precipitation today is 80%. For tonight, rain's likely, mainly before 11 p.m. Mostly cloudy skies overnight with a low around 38 and west winds to 15. Our chance of precipitation down to 60% tonight. And tomorrow, our chance of precipitation comes down to 30% with scattered showers mainly before 2 p.m. Mostly cloudy skies tomorrow, high of 46. Those west winds continuing at 10. We have a low tide coming right up at 12:36 p.m. here on the east side. That will be a 3.6-foot tide, followed by a high tide at 6:55 p.m. of 8.8 feet. Your next low tide will be at 2:10 a.m. and be 0.6 feet. And our high tide for tomorrow morning here on the east side will be at 9:12 a.m. and be 6.2 feet. Over on the west side, you have a low tide coming up at 1:13 this afternoon, a 5.4-foot tide in Larsen Bay, followed by a high tide at 7:21 p.m. of 12.9 feet. Your next low tide will be at 2:34 a.m. of 1 foot, and your high tide for tomorrow morning on the west side will happen at 9:17 a.m. and be 10 feet in Larsen Bay. Mariners, we do have a gale warning today for Marmot Island to Sitkanat, Kodiak's east side offshore. West wind to 35 knots right now and seas to 16 feet. For tonight, southwest 30, seas to 12 feet. For Wednesday, look for west wind to 30 knots, except west 20 knots north of Dangerous Cape and seas to 14 feet. Over in the Shelikof, small craft advisory through Wednesday, west wind to 30 knots, becoming southwest 15 knots this afternoon, seas 8 feet, subsiding to 3 feet this afternoon. For tonight, southwest 25, coming down to 15 knots late tonight in the Shelikof, seas to 7 feet. And for tomorrow, west wind to 15 knots, increasing to 25 knots tomorrow afternoon, seas 5 feet in the Shelikof Strait. The Kodiak City Council will hold a work session tonight. The meeting will happen at 7:30 p.m. It will also hold a regular council meeting on Thursday, also at 7:30 p.m. Elected officials may be participating via audio-video conferencing for both of these meetings. Public members are encouraged to tune in here on KMXT at 100.1 FM. The meeting will be web-streamed, and the web-streaming link and meeting packets are available online at the City of Kodiak website. For those who wish to request printed meeting materials or have questions regarding the meeting, please contact the clerk at 486-8636. Registration is open for the Kodiak Hockey League Youth Ice Hockey season, open to girls and boys ages 5 to 18. The season begins soon. New players are welcome and can begin through the KHL Learn to Play program. Just visit KodiakHockeyLeague.org for details. That's Kodiak Hockey League, all one word, .org. The next meeting of the Kodiak Public Broadcasting Board of Directors will be at 6 p.m. Tuesday, October 19th. That's happening via video conference. If you'd like to attend the meeting, please contact Jared Griffin at jared@kmxt.org for link information. That's Jared, J-A-R-E-D, at kmxt.org, and the public is welcome to attend. Extension kitchen classes are happening. Winter is coming, and food preservation workshops for fall 2021 are coming up. The extension kitchen classes are taught by UAF Cooperative Extension Agent Sarah Lewis, from her home kitchen in Juneau to your home kitchen anywhere. Sarah will offer an online resource site where participants can find publications and information for each class. But the real fun will happen on the Zoom class. You can join Sarah on Zoom to watch or cook along, and you can watch the video of the class at your own pace. Sarah will be leading classes by Zoom on Tuesdays, 5:30 p.m. to 7 p.m., starting October 5th. So they started last week. Participants may register one or all classes, which cost $10 each. There will be a door prize after each Zoom class, and you can register online. Contact Sarah Lewis at 907-523-3280. She's the Southeast Alaska Extension Agent. You can also contact her at sarah lewis@alaska.edu, and you can register online at Extension Kitchen Classes.
Listen for the Island Messenger here on Public Radio KMXT three times a day, Monday through Friday at 9 a.m., during the Midday Report at 12:20, and in the evening at 7 o'clock. If you have a community announcement or personal message, including lost and found items or pets, you can call KMXT at 486-3181, fax us at 486-2733, or email psa@kmxt.org.
Does your dog listen to KMXT, Kodiak? Well, he doesn't have much choice, does he? But does he know that neither of you contribute to your local public radio? He probably does. I bet he's giving you that look right now. Dogs are loyal, faithful, and rather judgmental companions. Ease your dog's troubled mind. Pledge support to your local public radio station right now. Here's how. Call 486-3181 or donate online at kmxt.org.
Welcome to KMXT's Talk of the Rock, our local community affairs program, where we explore issues and organizations related to our community. Talk of the Rock is hosted by members of the KMXT news team.
Thank you for joining us for another episode of KMXT 100.1 FM's Talk of the Rock. I'm your host today, Dylan Samar. Joining me is Jack Barnwell from the Kodiak Daily Mirror. How are you doing?
Doing good. Thank you.
So I wanted to have you on just to discuss some of the more recent news items that we've had around the island. I guess first and foremost would be the recent local election. What were you sort of expecting as far as an outcome goes? Were you expecting this?
Honestly, no. I was expecting Dennis Simmons to return to the assembly along with James Turner. Although it was a pleasant surprise to see Scott Smiley return as well.
Yeah.
Instead of Dennis.
I was just so shocked because Scott outperformed both incumbents. That's certainly not something I was expecting.
Indeed. Usually elections favor incumbents, especially during non-presidential years.
I guess it goes to show you that people had a really, really high opinion of Scott.
Yeah, he did well when I was here when he was on the assembly, and he seemed to have done well. At least it stuck in people's minds enough to actually catapult him into the success.
Right. So here's a question then in regards to the borough assembly. So we've seen KMXT's own Jared Griffin, Joseph Delgado, and now Scott Smiley returning to the borough assembly. How do you think that change, because that's nearly half of the borough assembly right there, that's 3 of 7 seats are just completely new people in the space of 2 months. How do you think that that's going to impact the dynamic of the borough? What issues do you think are going to be coming to the forefront? Which ones do you think are going to be playing second string?
Budget and manager will most likely be the priorities. Everything else might take second fiddle just because you need strong leadership to lead the borough. And the budget is always a contentious issue.
Mm. And, do you think that the borough is going to be more spendy? Do you think that this group is more inclined towards raising taxes or no?
From what I've seen, the borough assembly has always played it close to the vest, but I doubt that they will want to raise taxes.
Mm.
Just